Hey y'all, it's Lauren. Over the past year, Black journalists have been covering issues that directly affect them in their personal lives, from the pandemic to the protests against police brutality. But the struggle Black journalists are facing is nothing new. For decades, they have been counted out and not given the space and resources to tell stories about their communities. And oftentimes, Black journalists carry the weight of educating editors and senior advisors about the way stories should be told on our behalf. As a Black journalist myself, I have experienced being the only person of color in a room or working on a story, and how oftentimes our ideas are not valued. So I wanted to engage in conversation with other Black journalists in our region about their experience. This is why we put together Through Our Eyes, Black journalists covering race, identity, and culture, to bring Black journalists together to discuss what it's like to cover our stories in trying times. The event was moderated by our very own Jade Harrell, Director of On-Demand Content and Community Partnerships. Our panelists were Andrea Henderson, Race, Identity, and Culture Reporter for St. Louis Public Radio, Gabrielle Hayes, Community Correspondent for the PBS NewsHour, Malik Wilson, co-host for Show Me St. Louis on KSDK, Cameron Rhodes, co-founder of Real STL TV, Sylvester Brown Jr., Deaconess Fellow for the St. Louis American, and myself. Join us on this journey to uncovering the depth, passion, and sometimes exhausting experience of being a Black journalist.
As the community-facing representatives of your organizations, I hear you all sounding and sharing about your deliberate approach to bring more stories about people of color and community. Is that something that, let's talk about that void. Is it something that you're needing to drive? And why is that void there in such a way that you are uniquely qualified to fill it? You know, you have to pitch, you have to ask. In some cases, for those of you that have to pitch, tell me about that void and why you're very specific and strategic about it. And any of you who have assignments given can share.
I think that for me, because the podcast is based in, you know, that type of work, that, you know, I have the opportunity to do that, but also the podcast started because there was a gap in coverage in the newsroom. They felt like those stories weren't being told, and to have that position and to be in this community and to know that when I say We Live Here podcast, it means something to people. And so I feel like I carry that with me, and I try to always make sure that, you know, that I'm open to that, that I'm making sure that my stories are something that they can be proud of. And I think that it's been exciting to see that we're getting more opportunities, but the opportunity should have already been there. I think that a lot of, you know, white journalists kind of parachute into the community when things happen and then they leave. But to be able to go into the community and they feel like they can trust you, they feel like they can be vulnerable and authentic is something that I really value. And just to have the opportunity to speak to people that look like me, that are dealing with things that I know my family deals with, and, you know, not having to code switch all the time. Like, I feel like we have an understanding, not to say that just because I'm Black, I understand all Black communities, but it's just a certain commonality that we all have. And I think that that's really important. So I hope that we continue to get more opportunities for sure.
How about that for you, Malik?
So before I moved here to St. Louis, I was living in North Dakota, working as a news reporter there. Yeah, culture shock. but I feel like I had a white news director there. I mean, basically everybody there was white. And I felt like they allowed me to embrace the Black community that was there in North Dakota. And I commend my old news director all the time because she was flexible and she was willing to learn, you know, our culture. And so I've heard horror stories of other people being, you know, places like Wyoming and South Dakota, and their higher ups, it was always a question of like, you know, will this be good for our audience, with our audience, because it's always about the audience. What does our audience care about? And so I commend my Gabrielle, I commend my old news director for, you know, allowing me and, you know, other men and women of color at our station to embrace our culture and give people of color a platform.
Mm-hmm. Shouts out to North Dakota for having other Black staff that you could even have that dialogue with. Mm-hmm. Gabrielle, you smiled a bit when the audience framework came into play. Tell me a little more about that.
Well, I want to start by saying my job that I'm at now is unique because all of our stories are and our entire lens for the Communities Project is supposed to be about people of color and Black people. So I'm very grateful for the job I have now. But when he said, this hasn't been my only job. I've been in several newsrooms. And when he said it's all about the audience, I've been in newsrooms where I was the only Black journalist on several shifts. And I can't tell you how frustrating it is to have somebody say to you, well, does our audience care?
Right.
Does our audience care? Black people are a part of the audience, you know? So it kind of almost makes me emotional, but we've been in those rooms and those are very difficult spaces to be in, but it was important to be in them and to have a voice because our Black audience deserves to be reflected in the news as well. And so, yeah, you hit a chord.
I mean, I got goosebumps too. There's a challenge between, is it the cart before the horse? You know, is this our audience? Well, if our audience doesn't have a value for it, then what's missing? Is it what we're covering? Or is it the audience that we share and have invited? Sylvester, you chimed in with an amen. To be or not to be is the question. To be the guy that does all the Black stories or not to be the guy that does the Black stories. Or if I wanna do stories about Black people, I can if I want to. Or don't ask me to do the Black stories, because I don't speak for everybody. Talk about that dilemma in the middle, Sylvester.
Well, I find with the Black newspaper, it's cool. You know, do what you're supposed to do with the Black newspaper. But when I worked with the Post-Dispatch, it's very, very challenging because the editors, your bosses, they are like everybody else. They have no Black friends. They have no relationship with the Black community. So they put a value on it. My mantra, if you will, has always been, my job is to bust up stereotypes, to show you that Black folks are just as humane and just as multifaceted as everybody else. So what I find is that, especially within the white press, is a lack of humanity towards Blacks.
So how do we as Black journalists work to show our communities as humane? And how heavy is the weight that we carry in order to do it? In this episode, we hear more from our panelists about the strain and exhaustion that comes with convincing our organizations to engage with our communities more, how we as Black journalists continue to push back, and what we are hopeful for in the years to come. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here. Black journalists are constantly fighting for their place and voice in a cutthroat industry, all while trying to produce stories that Black and brown communities can be proud of. But how does that make us feel?
We start hearing more about the fatigue and exhaustion of carrying that as the person who has to convince their supervisors or decision makers to let it go, but also to try to change, reshape, and present a completely different narrative in a space that's unfamiliar. Andrea, the exhaustion.
I think earlier, before the pandemic, like I started here in St. Louis, beginning of 2019. And I remember like toward the spring, it was just like a lot of gun violence. And I think it was like that May, like Memorial Day weekend, like things just like spiked here in St. Louis. And so the editors were just like, oh, we need to talk about this gun violence. And of course, you know, I was okay with it because that's fine. I can talk about it. I can find different stories to kind of really open up the eyes of what's actually happening. And I think like I was in the community, I was talking to kids, like my particular, like, I guess like beat or story that I was, stories that I was looking for was like gun violence in kids and how it was affecting them. And I spent some time in North St. Louis and in the Greater Ville area. And to be honest, you know, the children there that I kind of spoke with, they were just so exhausted with it. And I could see it on their face, which kind of made me exhausted as well, like just reporting about it. And after all the stories came out or everything we did around gun violence, I kind of had a little PTSD too, because I was reporting on it and then I had been caught up in some gun violence while I was out there. So it was just like, am I supposed to be doing this? Like, you know, how do I protect myself and how do I keep my mind sane while still trying to report on the actual news? And I think like for me, I had to take a step back, and I know they were asking for more and more stories, do more and more stories about gun violence. And I just kind of was like, I can't do it right now. Like, I need to take a break. Like, let me do some fun stories, or let me talk about some food and Black people. Let me talk about, you know, something else so I can get my mind off of it. And I think it came to a point where, yes, I was exhausted, but then I started doing other things which helped me get my mind off of it. But then lo and behold, here comes COVID and we back up in this thing. So I'm just like, and then, you know, here comes the Black Lives Matter protest, and it's just like on and popping from there. So to be honest, now I'm exhausted every day. Like, it takes a lot to get me like going and get my juices flowing and my creative, you know, mind going again. And it's, I don't know how I'm going to get back to like the normal Andrea that I was before, but maybe y'all have some tips, you know. And I always say I'm like the self-care queen, but I may need some more tips for my self-care. But I try to help my other friends, my other Black journalists, how to keep their minds sane, you know, doing this type of work. But at times, you know, I'm suffering too.
But what if you could start your own media outlet and pick your stories? That's what Cameron Rhodes was able to do during the Ferguson uprising, which led him to eventually co-founding Real STL TV in 2017.
I'm going to be honest. A lot of social media was the reason why, you know, the Mike Brown, in our opinion, was as big as it was. Like, directly when it happened, when everything first happened, people took to their Twitter pages, their Facebook pages. Mainly Twitter and Facebook, and they got the information directly out to the masses. I had people in different cities, different states saying, man, what's going on back home? I just seen the police just kill somebody. And like, that was like one of the biggest things. Social media at the time was able to get that message to everybody. So as far as like being like boots on the ground at the time, we felt like we had to do it. We felt like it was necessary, because without regular human beings, without regular civilians, without people doing the tweets, without the Facebook posts, without the pictures, without the videos, you had mainstream media coming into town, or, you know, pulling up, you know, just like they do oftentimes, get the story wrong. And I forgot who it was that said it, but sometimes they don't have like a genuine connect to the actual community, to the actual people. So when you see a person that you feel like doesn't really represent you, or really doesn't really care, just here for a quote unquote hot story, for the most part, average community gonna be standoffish, whether it's a police officer, whether it's a, you know, a reporter, no matter who it is. If a person don't know you, we don't know you. Like, you come around when, like, you know, it's tragedy, but, you know, where are you at? Like, stuff going cool or good? You know, we don't see you then.
For you all in identity, do you lean into it as you work? Do you have to disconnect from it in order to work? What does it take for you to show up and create the space that's for you in this work?
I don't separate my identity from my work. I think we've had to have a lot of conversations about that, especially when they like to, you know, talk about the word like objectivity, right? Or like being unbiased and those conversations. But I'm a Black woman first, you know? Not that I make my stories about me, but I think that it's important to tell the stories I tell through the lens of a Black woman, you know? I'm also born and raised on the north side of St. Louis, and that matters. That's where I'm from. And I'm not gonna change that no matter what room I'm in, because I think that not only do our stories deserve to be told, but we gotta show up, as Cam said, not just when there is a crisis or a crime, we gotta be there all the time. And so my identity is what makes me the journalist that I am.
You're right where I was hoping to go. Thank you, Gabrielle. Lauren, I'm gonna go back to you.
Yes, I think I've grown into it, actually. I think especially in college and going through like that process and learning that it's not too many of us in here, and just learning that it's okay for me to speak up when things are wrong, to say that this isn't right, to say that this isn't what you think it is, or you're not explaining it in the right way. And I think I've grown to be this person that I am, and to say that, you know, I'm Black 24/7, like 365 days, and I can't be sorry about that. Like, that's who I am. You know, my grandparents are from Mississippi. They took the time to move to Chicago to even make a better life for me. And to sit there and not be proud of that, or be proud of myself and be proud of my family, is just, you know, it wouldn't make me feel good to, you know, step out into the world and be that way. So I think I've definitely grown and learned that, you know, I have to be me. I have to be Lauren no matter what. And that, you know, I can't let them down. I don't want them to see me doing things like that, or feeling like I can't, you know, tell our stories our way and from our lens. So I think it's definitely important for me to be me and to be Black all the time.
It ain't like you could just unzip it. Very nice. Malik.
Being 100% Black, you know, being, it's not always comfortable being Black, but I feel like we have an obligation with the platforms that we have to embrace being Black, show that being Black is cool, show that, you know, we can do something just because we're Black, you know? And so, you know, any type of personality, you are supposed to be yourself. And they always go back to the audience, but the audience can either gravitate towards you or not. But it's all about being 100% within yourself as a personality. And I think that's what makes us all in here so special, because people see us and they're like, I like what they're doing. And they're positive in what they're doing. So
I was raised a Jehovah's Witness. So I knew absolutely nothing about my Blackness, my history. So once I discovered that at the age of 22, maybe through books, I was on fire. You could not tell me anything bad about Black people, because I was so in love with our story. So that's been my guide. That's why I like Cam's Real St. Louis News, because he didn't wait for permission. He didn't wait for a license. He didn't wait for anybody to validate his dream. He went out and did it. And that's what I did in 1987. I started my own magazine and just did it. It was hell, but we just did it. I was struck by something that Andrea said, and it was about—
Please.
It was about being burnt out and overwhelmed by the negativity of it all. For me, the panacea, the medicine has always been to look at what Black folks are doing positively. With all the gang violence, there's a Black mother, a Black father, a Black organization, a Black minister, a Black activist who is working with kids, showing them a different way. The same with COVID. There's somebody advocating for the evicted. There's somebody advocating for those who are not getting proper medicine. So I find that flipping that script from the negative to those who are doing something about it is not only empowering, it's informative, and it shows it gives you a different lens to look at the same problems. So whenever you get down, try to find a solution, or somebody's working on a solution for that problem. I have to realize that the audience is hesitant to see us as human. The audience is hesitant to go beyond the stereotypes, and they will talk about, you know, the high rate of crime and the high rate of this and the high rate of treatable diseases. I always say we are exactly where we're supposed to be. If you consider the stuff we have gone through, the attempts to marginalize, to ostracize, to destroy us, we are still where we need to be. A lot of work to be done. But I'm surprised that there aren't more kids involved with violence and drugs. I'm surprised that there are not more of us who are strung out, not more of us who aren't, considering what we have been through. And I always preach that. We are a magnificent people. If we focus on, you will not define me by the least common denominator. You're not going to define me by the 2% who are committing crimes. Define me by the 99% who are out there working against the odds to raise their kids, to make a dollar, to, you know, to bring some kind of hope and happiness to their lives. That's who's going to define me. I'm going to help you define us that way.
Sylvester says he is up for the challenge to define us as Black folks in a new light through his stories. So up next, we hear more from our panel about carrying on a legacy, what they are hopeful for in the future, and what their headline would be for their personal experience in this work. In the midst of doing this work, you can learn a lot about yourself and the community. So Jay asked all of us, how will we describe the work we've done in the past year in one word? And Gabrielle says, this time has been a true test.
Because I feel like we've been pushed to our limits in so many different ways, whether it's at work or in our lives or even mental health, right? Like we've had to have that conversation during the pandemic. So that's what comes to my mind, just trying to overcome one test at a time.
I think my word would be realization, especially because I realized that I had to take like mental health breaks, or that I needed them, or just to have a moment, whether it's 5-10 minutes, that, you know, these stories are important, but also if I'm not here or, you know, able to tell them, then how will they get told? So I think just realizing that everybody needs a moment to breathe and to take a pause, and that, you know, burnout is real and you have to pay attention to the signs.
My word would be with growth. I think throughout the whole pandemic, I feel like God sat us all down somewhere and allowed us to sit in peace, sit in quiet, and, you know, alone. It was a lonely time, but it was a chance for us to grow, take down notes, you know, think about plans that you had, you know, in the next year, 3 years, 5 years, and kind of, you know, figure out a way to execute it. And so that would be my word, is growth.
I love it. Thank you, Malik. Sylvester?
My word would be empowering. And I say that because when I look at African Americans in the annals of time, through slavery, through Reconstruction, through Jim Crow era, to even now, we've always managed to overcome obstacles. We've always managed to rise when everybody wanted us and expected us to fall. With COVID, I see that same level of survival, resiliency, creativity, and actually still find a way to kick it. So, to me, it's just when I tell these stories and about how people are grappling with COVID, I'm always reminded of our collective spirituality, our belief system, our reliance on community, and just who the hell we are. We are an amazing people, and we deal with stuff in an amazing way. So empowerment is my word.
Go big or go home is the question, and it's a choice. We want stories to be told. We want understanding to happen. We want the stereotypes to be broken. We want to change and shift paradigms. Do we need to do that bigger, or do we need to go home where we tune in laser focused on community? Go big or go home. Any of you can take that on.
Well, I don't know if it's a matter of going big or going home. I think it's a matter of being committed, having a personal commitment to being the best storyteller that you can possibly be. And I say that when I worked at the Post-Dispatch, a lot of hate mail, death threats, et cetera, et cetera. But the biggest compliment was when people who didn't agree with me wrote to me and said, I don't agree with you. I don't even like you, but you made me think. So if somebody tells me I made them think, then my job is done. So my only goal is to tell a good story and have people read it. And that is something that crosses age, gender, and race. Be a damn good storyteller and only focus on making people read and appreciate or watch or view what you do.
My reward is knowing that potentially I can do something. As Gabrielle says, she says she's from North St. Louis. I'm from North St. Louis as well, right by the water tower. I grew up seeing most of my homeboys getting shot, killed, like right in front of my eyes. We grew up with, you know, schools that lost accreditations like Beaumont. We grew up with like a lot of problems in the direct in the city or urban communities. I'm not going to like get on the soapbox or need nobody to play a violin. You know, it's throughout America, like the urban communities. But I feel like, you know, we come into play, or I come into play, like Sylvester said, I'm not going the route where I have to get anything approved. I'm not going the route that, you know, I have to be filtered. I need to tell whatever story I need to tell or go in whatever direction I need to go in, because like my reward is being able to, you know, get help to the hood, get help to the urban communities, get help to the ghetto, the trenches, whatever people want to call it. My reward is, you know, being able to inform. My reward is being able to like uplift small businesses, things like that. So my reward is like rewarding the people, you know, giving them the voice that they need to be heard.
As the conversation came to a close, Jay asked all of us what our headline would be for the hope we have for the future.
My headline would be innovation, and it would be, of course, you want to see more people of color in newsrooms and in production rooms, you know, behind the scenes, on screen, all of that. But we need more people who are willing to be innovative. Like I said, I've heard horror stories of people who have been in, you know, white majority states, white majority cities, and their higher ups don't care to hear about the people of color or the, you know, indigenous people. In North Dakota, it's a lot of indigenous people. And so I was blessed to have a white news director who was innovative and wanted to hear that stuff. She wanted to, even if she didn't know, I mean, she grew up in North Dakota. She'd seen maybe 10 Black people in her whole life. So it's like, you know, to have people like herself, have people like I have here, you know, with Show Me St. Louis, who are innovators, who are not afraid to learn different cultures and embrace it and allow me to be myself and other people of color to be themselves. So that's my headline, innovation.
I love it. Gabrielle?
I don't know if I have a headline per se, but I do have like something to add. And I think, you know, when I think about the future of journalism and what it should look like, you know, we often talk about having more Black people and people of color in the room, but I think it's also, it's not just about having a seat at the table, but having a voice at said table. Because I think oftentimes institutions and organizations will put people in the room and then don't give people a chance. And so I think we have to challenge our organizations to do more. And, you know, one thing that's been said to me at prior jobs was that, like, we're not gonna solve these things overnight. But no one's asking you to, is the point, you know, like what people are asking you to do is to show up when it counts, you know? And so, that's, what I want in moving forward is the word for me would be accountability, because, you know, words are one thing, but actions are another.
I guess my headline would be tell a story before somebody else tell it for you. That's all I could think of, you know, pretty much by any means necessary. You know, like I say, I'm probably never going to work in the newsroom. I'm probably never going to work in mainstream unless, you know, it's something that I or we or a team that I'm affiliated with created. So, you know, I really don't have that desire like some of the other, you know, panelists might have. I'm just going to tell a story. I'm going to get to the story. I'm going to be the voice for the voiceless, voice for the people who need it.
I know I always tell myself, you know, Andrea, if you don't tell the story, who else will? So I need to always make sure that I am showing up like we were saying earlier, you know, to tell these stories, because, you know, sometimes people don't care about them. And if they don't care about them, then the world isn't going to care about it either. So I have to be the one to care about these stories because I care about my people.
I would just say voice for the next generation or something like that, because I feel like in order for us to continue to tell these great stories, we have to help others tell stories too. And I think, you know, mentoring, having places and spaces for us to see each other, for young kids to know that journalism is a career that they can even choose to do. I think a lot of us don't know that or don't see it as something that we can do, and that it's an option to tell stories in your own way. You don't have to work for anyone. You can build something from the ground up like Cam. You can do those things. But just to be able to feel like my voice matters. I think a lot of young kids need to know that. And if they knew that their voice mattered and they knew that they could tell stories, then, you know, they will want to take on that, you know, take on that next thing for us. And so just making sure that I'm passing the baton, you know, passing down information, and hopefully it continues on.
Thank you. Well, you know, Mr. Brown,
yes, ma'am.
I need you to give us the narrative. Give us the Afrofuturistic, what might be possible if all things aligned and the devil got out the way. What would be your hope?
My headline is inspired by Sam Cooke. Change is going to come, and it's already happening. Look at this panel right here, these young people. There's a kid out there who will see Malik, Gabrielle, Andrea, Cam, Lauren, and that kid will say, I can do that. And there's only one genre. If you look at technology, if you look at Hollywood and the streaming services, Netflix, Showtime, Amazon, you got Black folks now writing their own script, writing their own movies. That is huge influence. So going back to what I said earlier, we are exactly where we're supposed to be. We're in a very strategic and powerful position to influence what kids and young people and everybody sees, despite what white media tells us. I can do a story on these five people right now that will talk about your different challenges and hopes and aspirations in the genre that you work in. So to wrap it up, change is going to come, rest assured. We already doing it. We're where we're supposed to be. All we have to do is remember who we are.
This show is produced by me, Lauren Brown, Director of On-Demand Content and Community Partnerships and Executive Director Jade Harrell. Special thanks to our panelists, Andrea Henderson, Gabrielle Hayes, Cameron Rhodes, Sylvester Brown Jr., and Malik Wilson for joining us. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. From PR.